Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Stacy Hopkins, co-founder of the group Brand New Congress, who discusses the goals of this new political organization, which grew out of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. Rachel Curley of Public Citizens Congress Watch, who describes the campaign to win passage of the proposed We the People Democracy Reform legislation, targeting big money in U.S. politics. And Art Tanderup, a farmer and activist with Bold Nebraska, who talks about his group's expansion of its mission to support local anti-pipeline campaigns across the U.S. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
A day before Brazil's Senate voted to go forward with impeachment proceedings and the suspension of Workers' Party President Dilma Rousseff, key right-wing opposition leader Jair Bolsonaro was in the Middle East being baptized in the Jordan River. The trip to Israel was organized by evangelical pastor Reverend Everaldo Pereira, leader of Brazil's Social Christian Party, to baptize Bolsonaro and his sons. During the 10-day trip to the Holy Land, Bolsonaro, a retired army officer and proponent of gun rights, lauded Israel's right-wing government and praised the might of the Israeli military. Bolsonaro and his allies in Brazil's so-called Bullet Caucus campaigned hard to remove Rousseff and her ruling Workers' Party from power. Since entering Brazil's lower house of Congress in 1990, Bolsonaro has been an advocate for gun rights, increasing the military budget, and privatizing prisons. A decade ago, the caucus worked with the U.S.-based National Rifle Association to kill a proposed law banning civilian gun purchases. In Brazil's most recent national election, the tough-on-crime rhetoric of the Bullet Caucus boosted its popularity, enabling their members to win control of a majority of seats in the lower house. But with their success in ousting President Rousseff, the pro-gun caucus, in coalition with the Christian right, is now intent on frustrating Brazil's ongoing efforts to turn the page on military dictatorship, pushing measures that may bring lethal consequences in a country that already racks up the highest absolute number of murders. By a 3-to-1 margin, voters in Switzerland rejected a recent ballot initiative that would have established a universal income, allocating a monthly grant of 2,500 Swiss francs to each adult citizen, or about $2,560 U.S., and 625 francs for each child under 18, regardless of employment status. Supporters launched the initiative to fight poverty and social inequality and guarantee a dignified life to everyone. Although the ballot measure failed, the campaign triggered a national debate over the growing numbers of jobs being lost to automation and globalization. Backers of the universal income plan didn't declare how much their system would cost, but opponents warned that the price tag could cost 25 billion Swiss francs annually and require deep spending cuts. In colorful protests leading up to the vote, hundreds of activists acting as robots moved through Zurich, promising to free workers from the daily grind of needing to earn a paycheck. Across Europe and elsewhere, new pilot projects are emerging that employ the concept of a guaranteed income. In Finland, the government is considering a trial to give basic income to about 8,000 people from low-income groups. The Dutch city of Utrecht is also developing a pilot project for basic income. Around the world, many governments from Australia to Canada are taking a closer look at the administrative costs of running complex welfare systems and asking themselves whether a basic income would simply be cheaper. Philadelphia citizens have filed a class action lawsuit against the city water department for lax water testing procedures that could conceal lead contamination, an echo of the tragic water crisis revealed in Flint, Michigan. The lawsuit comes as The Guardian newspaper reports 33 cities in the eastern United States, including Philadelphia, use water testing practices that can underestimate dangerous levels of lead in drinking water. Experts said three seemingly harmless instructions provided to residents in Philadelphia could have a profound impact on how much lead is found in water. These methods include removing the filter at the top of the faucet, running the tap before a 6-hour test period, and slowly pouring water sample bottles. The EPA warned a decade ago that cities should stop using these techniques. Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, a pediatrician credited with bringing Flint's crisis with lead-tainted drinking water to the public's attention, recently wrote, "Regrettably, our research reveals that the potentially increasing threat of lead in drinking water may dampen the significant strides in childhood lead prevention efforts. As our aging water infrastructures continue to decay, and as communities across the nation struggle with finances and water supply sources, the situation in Flint, Michigan may be a harbinger for future safe drinking water challenges." This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Elaine Osowski.
After emerging victorious in a string of primary elections on June 7th, Hillary Clinton won the pledged delegates needed to become the nation's first woman to capture a major party presidential nomination. Over the last week, Clinton has turned her attention to forcefully challenge the positions and caustic rhetoric of the Republicans' presumptive candidate, Donald Trump. But while her Democratic Party opponent, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, hadn't yet suspended his campaign, preferring to continue the fight until voters had cast ballots in the nation's last primary in Washington, D.C., on June 14th, it was clear that his quest for the nomination was over. Sanders, who called for a political revolution, surprised many political observers by winning 22 state primaries and caucuses, drawing 1.5 million people to his rallies, and raising $228 million from about 2.5 million small donors. The candidate reportedly will now pursue changes in the Democratic Party platform that will include planks advocating a $15 an hour minimum wage, universal health care, and tuition-free public colleges and universities. But while thousands of Sanders supporters are expected to attend a national conference in Chicago June 17th through 19th, dubbed the People's Summit, to debate the future of the revolution, a group of former Sanders staffers have already formed a new political organization called Brand New Congress. This new nonpartisan group aims to harness the skills and fundraising power of the Sanders campaign to win congressional seats with the goal of moving the country in a more progressive direction. Your reporter spoke with Stacy Hopkins, co-founder and team leader with Brand New Congress, who discusses the short and long-term objectives of this new Sanders-inspired political organization.
We decided to come together, a couple of former staffers and volunteers who worked with the campaign and also the grassroots. We recognized that some of the missteps made was not recognizing the energy and organizing power and talent that was in the grassroots. And we said we didn't want to watch the energy that was created go dormant or get distilled or, you know, fall into apathy. So we said, you know, what instead of asking the question, what's next, what if we just say, look, we have an idea? So we launched a Brand New Congress, and the idea is it's very simple. One plan, one unified campaign, and the goal is to have 535 members of Congress all supporting the Bernie platform. We realize that is a large goal, but it is a goal, you know, and it's definitely possible. We definitely can change the face of Congress. We feel that it is not representative of the people in terms of racial or gender parity. We have a Congress that is out of touch, that really can't agree on anything. I like to say they can't agree on lunch. And they have brought us nothing but standoffs and shutdowns and obstructionism. And they haven't done the really necessary work of the people. We have crumbling infrastructure. We have temporary stopgap measures that have damaging cuts to people who've done no harm. And while we have seen our coffers raped and pillaged to pay for you know, endless wars. And so we think that the people, the actual people who Congress is supposedly created by, should reflect that. So that is one of our goals and objectives, to do that. And we're on tour, and we are coming to communities across America to look for those honest, accountable people that we need. And we all know them. Some of them may actually be us. So we are doing events, something like the Bernie Barnstorms, and starting the conversation and starting the organization that's really going to be part of the infrastructure that is going to take this campaign to not just 2018, but beyond.
Stacy, tell us a bit about how this new group is structured and how it's different than other political action committees or other organizations that try to get people elected to Congress. From my understanding, you're going to be doing fundraising at a national level to help your chosen candidates district by district, which takes a lot of the burden off of the individual candidates, where money is has long been a major obstacle to getting grassroots folks elected to Congress who aren't beholden to special interests.
Absolutely. So our campaign is a mechanism that frees our candidates up from the hamster wheel and what is known as business as usual in politics by being the supportive financial mechanism for them. We're providing the services that they would have to seek. You know, we would be giving voter files. This is a way of freeing candidates up to do what they do best, meeting with the voters and getting their message out. We will provide like in-house shop for them. The beauty is we all have the platform for Bernie, and that is the agreement that the candidates run on. So we support them. We free them up to be better candidates, which in turn gives us better government, which gives us better and progressive policies that a lot of people, regardless on which side of the aisle, agree on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stacy, I wanted to ask you this. In your estimation and testing the waters with this new organization in recent months, do you believe that the organizers and Bernie Sanders supporters from the campaign can make the transition to a longer-term commitment without all the energy, media coverage, and short-term goals that state-by-state primary elections bring? It's certainly a much larger commitment in the long run to move Congress in a way different direction than it is to win a, you know, a statewide primary campaign.
It's going to be challenging. Any movement has that challenge. And, you know, with Bernie, he was ignored for a long time, and it wasn't, you know, mainstream media that made him or created those crowds. It was social media. It was independent media. We can't expect to create change by doing things old ways. We can't depend on unreliable systems that weren't created in our favor to suddenly start acting that way.
That was Stacy Hopkins, co-founder and team leader with a new political organization, Brand New Congress. Learn more about Brand New Congress by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. Last April, a coalition of more than 260 advocacy groups supported a series of protest and civil disobedience actions in Washington, D.C., called Democracy Spring and Democracy Awakening. Their activists demanded the overturning of the Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United ruling that opened the floodgates of unlimited and unaccountable money in U.S. political campaigns, reforms to end the corrupting influence of big money in politics, and free and fair elections that give every American an equal voice. The enthusiastic public support for Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign message, denouncing the unchecked influence of a small group of billionaires on U.S. politics, reflects public opinion polls where large numbers of Americans express the belief that our democracy is broken. As the 2016 presidential and congressional election campaign swings into high gear, Political spending is predicted to break the previous record of $6.3 billion spent in 2012. On June 9th, Democrats in the U.S. Senate, seeking to address growing public concern, announced a new package of proposed legislation that they say is designed to hold the government more accountable, amend the Constitution to end unlimited campaign contributions, and reform the lobbying laws to limit special interest influence on elected officials. Your reporter spoke with Rachel Curley, Democracy Associate with Public Citizens Congress Watch, who summarizes the set of bills being proposed in the Senate, known as the We the People Democracy Reforms.
I think the impetus for the action in the Senate really came from the awareness in our country at how fed up people are at the presence of special interests in our democracy. Polling shows us that 85% of Americans think that the way we fund campaigns needs to be changed. That's a really high number. That's a tons of people understand that corporations have more say than we do in our elections, and they are tired of that. They are tired of seeing that happen time and time again. And so I think the Democrats in the Senate see that people are deeply moved by this issue and they want to see change. And so they are taking a stand and putting forth legislation that could make these changes. There are a lot of things in this package, but I will try and summarize them. One section of it covers transparency and disclosure, so making the donations that come to candidates and their campaigns clear and transparent so we know where they're coming from. So some of that is mandatory disclosure of campaign donations. Some of it is requiring candidates for federal office to report major contributions within 48 hours. So right now, reporting is not really happening in real time. And if it happened in more real time, that would increase transparency around who is funding our elections. And then another piece of it is reining in these super PACs that are also collecting huge amounts of money for campaigns. So that's one piece of it, like I said, disclosure and transparency. Another is affecting laws around lobbying. So most folks know what lobbyists are. You know, they go to Congress and talk about specific issues that affect their clients. And there are rules around lobbying right now. You do have to be registered, but the Senate Democrats want to go further. One of the things that they want to do is enact a ban on former members of Congress becoming lobbyists. So once you've left Congress, either in the House or the Senate, you're no longer allowed to come back and lobby for something. The one other thing I'll mention is that this does include a constitutional amendment that would overturn the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United, which was the case that opened the floodgates for corporate spending in elections.
Is there a realistic possibility that Congress could pass some of this legislation, or is this going to be used in a way to keep politicians accountable when they are up for re-election this November?
The legislation is bipartisan, and so it shows that there is broad support for these issues. And I think what's important to note is that big money in politics is a problem for everyday voters of both political parties. And so regardless of political affiliation, wealthy special interests look out for their own interests and not those of everyday Americans. And so I think the success of this proposal is that it's continuing to pound the drumbeat that Americans are tired of the system being rigged against them, and they are looking for change, and that legislators should support this change. I know sometimes the issue of money in politics can feel frustrating, but this is an excellent opportunity to call your legislator and say, there is a package of reforms. It's called the We the People Act, and I would like you to support it, and I would like you to make this happen. So this is a good moment for folks to continue to make noise on this issue.
Rachel, I'll just end on this question here. Many people across the country are pretty cynical about politics and about the role of big money, Wall Street money, pharmaceutical money, health insurance company money. All that seems to be calling the shots in Washington when it comes to important policy decisions. What, if anything, gives you optimism that there's a change of mood in the country, or maybe on Capitol Hill too, that gives this legislation a fighting chance?
I have always been an optimistic person, but I came to Washington anyway, and I love working here because I can see that there are solutions. And even though it does seem like an insurmountable problem, this piece of legislation is one piece in a large puzzle of solutions that can happen, and our democracy can be restored. The balance can sort of be reset, and we can have a democracy that is reflective of what our communities actually look like. And so I think what I'll say is that a lot of folks may not think that there are solutions, and it does seem like an issue that can't be addressed, but this is one step, the We the People Act, but this is one in a plan of lots of organizations from across the country that are working on. And the Democracy Awakening event was just the beginning. I think the movement is growing, and I think that the time is now that we can take back our democracy.
That was Rachel Curley, Democracy Associate with Public Citizens Congress Watch. Find links to more information on the We the People Democracy Reform legislation by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. One of the most effective groups that worked to stop the northern leg of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada into the U.S. was Bold Nebraska. Founded by Nebraskan Jane Klebb, it brought together farmers, ranchers, and members of indigenous nations to carry out many audacious and creative actions. These protests included building a barn powered by renewable energy directly in the path of the planned pipeline, and organizing the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, which set up a week-long encampment on the Mall in Washington, D.C., taking their fight to President Obama, who finally killed the Keystone XL project in November 2015. Bold Nebraska is now broadening its reach, both in terms of geography and the fossil fuels it's targeting. The group initiated a project called Bold Alliance, a network of citizen action groups in rural states, whose mission is to assist activists across the U.S. fight interstate frack gas pipelines and other gas infrastructure projects. In early June, Native and non-Native members traveled east to symbolically plant sacred corn seeds on the proposed paths of two pipelines in Virginia and West Virginia. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Art Tanderup, a retired teacher and anti-pipeline activist, who now farms 160 acres in northern Nebraska on a farm that's been in his wife's family for generations. He participated in the recent planting of the sacred corn in Virginia. Here, Tanderup describes his involvement in protesting the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline and the move to expand Bold Nebraska's outreach to fossil fuel pipeline opponents across the country.
In November of 2013, we held an activity here on our farm. It was the first of the spirit camps that were held with the Cowboy Indian Alliance. Ours was the Ponca Trail of Tears spirit camp because part of our farm is on the Ponca Trail of Tears, where the Ponca were driven from north of us up here at Niobrara to Oklahoma with Chief Standing Bear and his people.
A group of you has taken some sacred Ponca corn to plant along the paths of other proposed pipelines far from Nebraska. Why did you decide to do that?
This week has been really exciting with that. We had 3 days, and we did two sites a day, and we did four sites in Virginia and two sites in West Virginia. We went to those places. You know, they're fighting the same thing, the corporate greed, the total disrespect for property rights, and they're obviously not thinking much about the future of this earth and, you know, the damage that they're doing with climate change and so forth. So we had gatherings at six farms. We kind of explained the history of this corn and what we're doing with it, and then we did some of the Ponca ceremony at each site, and then we planted corn and always closed with a prayer of thanksgiving. So a very spiritual thing as well as an exciting action.
So this is taking the fight against the KXL, the tar sands pipeline, and using the same kind of tactics against frack gas pipelines. That seems like a really important development.
Yes, it is, exactly. And everybody told us it couldn't be done with KXL. You know, a lot of groups, a lot of people work together. And, you know, one of the things that Jane was so good at was creating unlikely alliances with all the different groups and individuals out here. And that was so important. And we all focused on one thing, and that was stopping this. And part of what we did was to give these people some hope, the spirit that they could actually do this. It isn't totally overwhelming. They are Americans. They have rights. And they can stop these things. You know, the corporations don't need to run this country. It's just like Keystone. There are so many issues with it. You know, the eminent domain and property rights, you know, the climate change issue. You know, you just go on and on and on with the different issues with, around these pipelines. They can be stopped.
And these pipelines were the Mountain Valley and the Atlantic Coast pipelines, right?
Yes, those were the two that we, yeah,
okay.
that we were at.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We did talk a lot about the 1718 various pipeline projects. They're growing like weeds. You know, they're all over the place, and they're all intended for export.
Right.
So, you know, they've all got to be stopped.
Many proposed pipelines are headed to Dominion's Cove Point LNG export facility, which is under construction right now in Lusby, Maryland. And local people, supported by some outside groups, are trying to stop it, since it will affect everyone on the planet if these enormous methane emissions from bringing the gas in and liquefying it are allowed to happen. So, Art Tandrup, you've described Bold Nebraska as the mothership, but this bold concept is expanding. Can you talk about that?
You know, what was decided was that there are issues in other states. So now in a few states, we started like Bold Iowa mm-hmm. to fight the Bakken pipeline, Bold Oklahoma to deal with the fracking and the earthquake issue and that sort of thing down there. There's a Bold Louisiana. And the states have been selected that really need the help right now. And then, you know, and they all come under the umbrella of Bold Alliance.
That was Art Tandrup, a farmer and activist with the group Bold Nebraska. Learn more about Bold Nebraska and their Bold Alliance initiative by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced and distributed by Squeaky Wheel Productions. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, please contact Between the Lines through our website at btlonline.org, where you can hear our current and archived programs in MP3 and streaming audio, and support our show, which is celebrating 25 years on the air in 2016. There you can also subscribe to free weekly podcasts, program summaries, and interview transcripts. Follow us on Facebook at Between the Lines Radio News Magazine and on Twitter at BTL Radio News. Our theme music was written by Richard Hill and Jody Gray and performed by Mikata. This week's program was produced by Susan Bramhall, Anna Manzo, Bob Nixon, Elaine Osowski, Gary Trujillo, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Scott Harris.